Have you heard about Global Poker? Global Poker is the fastest growing card room in the US today, and it's available online at globalpoker.com. Global Poker is a social poker site that offers safe and secure cash out options by using their unique and patented sweepstakes model. Players can compete in big guaranteed tournaments, jackpot sit and goes, or cash games featuring Hold'em, Omaha, and even Crazy Pineapple. Don't wait. Check out Global Poker today.
Poker Stories is an audio series that features casual interviews with some of the game's best players and personalities. Each episode highlights a well-known figure in the poker world and dives deep into their favorite tales, both on and off the felt.
Hello and welcome to Poker Stories, a podcast brought to you by Card Player, the Poker Authority, and hosted by me, Julio Rodriguez. Today I present to you episode number 84, featuring one of poker's most well-known voices, David Tuckman. If you've watched any decent amount of poker in the last decade plus or so, then you've undoubtedly have heard David at some point, whether it was on camera or calling the action from a commentator's booth. Tuckman started out in LA with Bart Hansen doing Live at the Bike. He then worked Full Tilt's Million Dollar Cash Game and started doing work for Poker Stars while he was living in London and covering the NFL and NASCAR for Sky Sports. In 2011, he started working with the World Series of Poker and has called the action for the live stream every summer since. Because of these often marathon final tables he covers, Tuck has most likely called more hands of poker than anybody else in history. But did you know that before his career in sports broadcasting, Tuck tried to make it in Hollywood as an actor? There were a few close calls, and he does have an IMDb page with half a dozen credits, but ultimately it was poker where he found his sweet spot. Still, we did get into some fun stories about his time on the screen, including shows like Beverly Hills 90210, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Party of Five, and even a big movie that he was cut out of. Anyway, that's enough intro. Here's my conversation with David Tuckman. I am here with the one and only David Tuckman. How you doing, David?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I was thinking about your name. I mean, did anybody ever call you Dave, David growing up? I mean, with a name like Tuckman, you're just going to be drawn to nicknames, I'm guessing.
Yeah, generally my friends call me Tuck. It's actually kind of endearing to me. Mm-hmm. I would say that when somebody starts calling me Tuck, it reminds me of my childhood and instantly endears me to that person. There's only one person in the world who gets away with calling me Davey.
Davey.
I don't like that. That is FBT. Mm-hmm. He always calls me Davey, and he can get away with it because I love him.
That is Greg Mueller, full-blown tilt.
Yeah.
He was on this podcast, so listeners out there, check it out. A lot of funny Phil Hellmuth stories on that one.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I like him. So, occasionally it's Dave or David. My wife calls me Dave.
She has that right.
She does not call me Tuck, but Tuck is generally what I go by.
Friar Tuck?
Friar Tuck was...
The Tuck Man?
Yeah, I've never... You know, Friar Tuck was kind of... it's not something I did, but I think when I did Live at the Bike way back in the day, somebody called me that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's my 2+2 handle.
Got it.
I believe. But I've never really used it.
Wasn't like a nickname based out of your...
Yeah, no, nobody ever called me Friar Tuck growing
up. Conservative nature.
Yeah, nobody ever called me that. Yeah, nobody ever called me that, but it was something that kind of came out as I got older.
All right, so grew up in New York.
Yeah.
Where in New York?
Basically Long Island area.
Okay. My mother's from Bayshore.
Okay,
so
there
I have the roots.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a little bit everywhere. Like, I was born in Queens. I lived in upstate for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And you went to school in Albany, right?
I went to school at Hamilton College and Albany both.
Okay.
And, my wife's from upstate New York and everything, but I spent some of my time upstate and then many of my formative years in like Long Island, Queens area.
And what were you getting into as a kid? I'm brothers, sisters?
I have an older sister.
Okay. And what were you getting into?
I played like an ungodly amount of hockey.
Yeah.
Like that was basically like
took
over my life.
Standout, right?
Huh?
You had a shot at
doing something in hockey, right?
I don't know. I mean, I probably not, to be honest.
You're
I mean,
wearing a hockey shirt right now.
I am wearing a hockey shirt right now. This is a Christmas gift. Peter Puck, for any of you hockey fans out there. It's a great book. But, yeah, no, I wouldn't say. I mean, I played college hockey. Mm-hmm. I started at a young age, and I was good, I guess, mm-hmm. you know. But, you know, after college, like, I had a couple of, like, minor chances to play, like, low minor leagues, and that pretty much would have been it.
Yeah.
You know, I still play now. I coach now. My kid plays. I love the game. If I didn't play hockey, I would lose my mind. Mm-hmm. So I still play, like, probably once or twice a week on average when I'm not suspended for being a bad boy. But, yeah. I think
that,
saying
that was
anything
your childhood, the, right?
That was definitely my childhood. That I did some acting, mm-hmm. you know. Well,
we'll get to your IMDb credits.
There you go. Yeah, but and I always loved that. Obviously, I was kind of a class clown, but yeah, to suggest that I had any more aspirations in hockey would be wouldn't be genuine.
Do you have any like glory day moments from those hockey games? Do you remember a particular standout performance?
There were a few here, to be honest with you.
When you get drunk and start telling your hockey stories, what comes out?
Say it again?
I'm saying when you get drunk and tell your hockey stories,
right,
what comes
out? Right, hey, let me tell you, kid, what I did. No, I mean, there's a few that kind of stood out to me that were kind of cool. Like, there was one particular game so I was playing in upstate New York, and we had a game that was closer to the metro area. And my grandma was still alive, and she hadn't seen me play in a long, long time. And it was like the first game of the year, and I was so geared up to play. It was my junior year of college, and first game of the season. And we were playing one of the better teams, mm-hmm. and we were not. And I scored 5 goals in the game. Like,
damn.
We won 7-5.
Is there a name for 5?
Yeah. No, I don't even know what that is. Yeah, I scored 5. I scored 2 in the first, 2 in the second, and then I scored the empty netter to clinch it. And we won the game 7-5. And it was just really an amazing moment because, like, my whole family was there, mm-hmm. you know? Like, my grandma was there and my aunts were there, and they just never got to see me play. My dad even came. He didn't get to really see me play much, which was pretty cool. And I remember at the end of the game, my best friend was playing goalie, and they were just putting on all sorts of pressure. We were up 6-5 with, like, you know, whatever it was, a minute left, 45 seconds left. And we had a face-off in our zone, and I won the face-off, and I shot it down the whole way and scored in the empty netter. And my best friend, Brad Topper, who was the goalie at the time, he and I just a huge embrace as if we won. Like, it was so stupid, as if we like
game,
won anything more
game
than just
one of the season.
Game one. But we were pretty bad the year before, mm-hmm. so to win the first game and in that fashion, it was kind of cool. So it was just one of many hockey memories that kind of stand out.
And what about hockey injuries?
I have terrible shoulders. I have separated or dislocated both of my shoulders numerous times. Yeah. First one happening my junior year of high school. One of my most disappointing things was my senior year of high school, where I was like, I'm going to be the man. This is my year. Mm-hmm. I was trying out for a junior team and got injured I was trying out for a different team, and I fell awkwardly, separated my right shoulder and couldn't play. And then by the time like my shoulder had gotten back into it, I had to kind of join a different team. And it was just like, it was my senior year. I was looking forward to it. So it just kind of sucked. But my shoulders both have been... pretty bad.
That sounds like a real manly injury. I mean, I once sneezed in the shower and threw my back out, so.
I do that now. I mean, that happens all. I mean, right now, my neck is sore. I don't know what from.
Yeah. Being in a different bed last night, probably.
Yeah, no, this just happens all the time now.
That pillow's a little thicker.
Right. Unfortunately, my shoulders are pretty good now. Knock on wood. You guys are going to hear this. I'm knocking on wood. But I still do, like, shoulder exercise to kind of keep them. Mm-hmm.
So when you were at SUNY Albany, you studied journalism and biology.
Yeah.
The plan with that was to become...
I have no idea. I think college is kind of stupid for many people. I think college is really cool for some people. Case in point. Okay, so my nephew, who is just this like ridiculously motivated... I'm so proud of who he is. He went to Annapolis, and he is now flying fighter jets.
Yeah.
He's up in Whidbey Island. He's in the Navy, you know. And he just knew. He knew at like 13, 14 years old, this is what I want to do. But I think for the most of us, I don't know about you, but for most of us at like 14, 15 years old, we have no idea. Can I curse?
Yeah.
Okay, we have no idea what the fuck we want to do with life, you know, and what we want to do in like the world. And I went to college at like 17 years old or whatever it was. And I was like, I haven't, because that's what we did. Where I grew up, it was like everybody went to college.
Yeah.
It
same here.
It wasn't a matter of like, oh, are you going to college? It was, oh, where are you going?
Exactly.
That was the thing.
You go, you spend a couple years drinking, and you'll figure it out.
Yeah, and I just don't understand that. Like, so I went to college, and I was like, I don't know what I want. And they were like, well, just take courses in things that you enjoy. So I was like, okay. So I started, I actually wrote for the, I wrote a sports column for, when I was at Hamilton, I wrote a sports column, and then at Albany as well, I was writing like a sports column for them. Funny enough, my mom kept them. I literally just got it from her. She like brought it out when she came out to visit us for Christmas. And, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. But so I like that, and I was like, okay, I'll do that. And I like biology. I like science growing up. So I was like, I'll do that. I had no idea what I wanted. Which like brings me to my point, which is I think college is great for some people. I think college is great at some point. If I could do it over again, I probably would have taken like 2 or 3 years off, figured out some stuff, and then I would have gone back to school knowing at least like, oh, this is what I want to go to school for.
You'd been more dedicated, know exactly what 100%. You want.
100%. I remember when I moved to LA. When I moved to LA after I graduated, I spent 1 year in Manhattan. And then I moved to LA, and I took like I just took classes at Santa Monica Community College just for fun. I was like, I like studying. I like going to school. I know I'm weird. I took those courses. They cost me $36 for a class.
Yeah.
Okay. It was $12 a credit, I guess. So it was 3 credits. So $36 for a class for a full semester, and I would take like one class a semester in all sorts of different things. I took those classes far more serious than I did when I was actually like in college getting my degree. And I just realized, I was like, no, I'm older and I know what I want to do. You know?
What
and
if
I
you had done this first?
Yeah, 100%. Like, why didn't I just go get a job?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I don't know. Whatever you want to do. Figure it out and then go back to college. And I guess the argument is, well, maybe you won't go back then. Okay, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you go to LA.
I went to LA.
With dreams of stardom?
I don't know. I dated a girl. So I met this girl, Donna. I'm trying to come up with new stuff that nobody's ever asked me, that I've never like revealed. So I dated this girl. I met this girl the summer after my sophomore year.
We could promote your podcast where you can get all these stories.
No, but I haven't actually told these kind of like little things.
Okay,
so
cool.
Anyway, like it's boring stuff, but it's kind of cool. Anyway,
yeah.
So sophomore year after college, I was hanging out with one of my best friends. He was dating a girl, and a girl came to visit her. They were like childhood friends. Anyway, this girl, Donna, ended up like hanging out. We ended up like hanging out for 2 weeks, had a great time. And then like, she came to visit me, and I went to visit her, and then she came to visit me, and I went to visit her, and like back and forth and back and forth, and she lived in LA, and we kind of had this like long-distance relationship for like 3 years. It was pseudo-exclusive, but not like it was like exclusive, but it was like when we went on, like when I went to spring break, she was like,
have fun.
Go have fun.
Yeah.
And same for her. It was like, okay, it was kind of a weird, mature, like long-distance open relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But we really like loved each other, and I still to this day love her. You know, I'm still friends with her brother. She lives in Chicago now. She's married with a kid. She's a great, great person. Nothing but love for her. But anyway, part of it was like to get a change. I was doing a little bit of acting and, you know, I was in LA. I was in New York and I didn't really know what exactly I wanted. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go out to LA for 3 or 4 months, see if I can get a job. I knew I could like stay with her parents. She still was in school for one more year. And I was like, okay, I know I can stay with the parents for like a few weeks to kind of get my feet on the ground. I did. And then, you know, got a job, got a different job. You know, I interviewed for some, like I actually got a job with like an investment banking firm. It was weird.
Yeah, you've had a lot of acting. Jobs.
Yeah. I'm a big believer in
bartender, like, you did physical therapy.
I'm a big believer in life experiences. You know, like to me, I feel like you're never too old to kind of reinvent yourself. If you're not happy doing what you're doing, then do something else.
Yeah.
You know, you only get one chance at this.
Of course.
If you're not happy doing your whatever it is you're doing, change.
Stop wasting time.
Yeah. What are you doing? I tried a bunch of things. You know, investment banking. I've always kind of been like I've always loved investing in like finance and that kind of world. Like my dad was an accountant. So.
Yeah.
But. After like a month of that, I was like, yeah, this kind of sucks. I was like, I like doing the analyst part, but I was like, they just had me like cold calling a bunch of people and like asking them. I was like, this is stupid.
Let's talk about your acting career.
Acting career. Yeah. Career is a very It's a very generous
word. You have some credits here. I mean, it may look like extra work, I guess.
No, it wasn't extra work.
Yeah, but
none of my credits are. None of that is extra work that you see. I swear, I did extra work. In fact, my first extra job was, oh man, it was a Pamela Anderson movie.
Barbed Wire.
Yes, you got it.
My father took me to that way too young.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. It was a very inappropriate movie to go to see when you're that
young.
I'm
like in LA like for a hot minute. Mm-hmm. And somebody told me like, oh, if you want to like learn what a set, like somebody had told me that you should learn what, you know, what it's like when they're filming.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on. And I was like, that makes sense, you know? So you basically fill out an application at this place called Central Casting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that still exists or not. I assume it does. But Central Casting was basically like you register to be an extra. And
when they need bodies.
They had, right. And they had union extras and non-union extras.
Keep going.
Okay. So they had union extras and non-union extras. And the way the contracts were still like that, each of these shows had to actually... They had to hire a certain amount of union extras at a certain price, which was higher, before they could go with non-union.
Got it.
And the big goal for every extra actor was like, become union. Because if you became union, you got like health benefits.
Yeah.
And
just
SAG,
to stand there.
Oh, SAG health benefits were amazing. Yeah. Plus you got paid like double. You got a lot of, it was much better. Anyway, so this is my first gig and I applied and they needed an extra and I was one of the non-union extras on this show on Barbed Wire.
Yeah. So do you remember what you did on the movie?
I walked on an airplane.
Oh, okay.
So I guess there's an airplane.
So was it like the night?
I've never seen
scenes.
The movie, by the way.
Okay. You're not missing much.
I've never seen the movie. I was wearing a leather jacket. I remember my leather
there's
jacket.
There's a lot of leather in that movie.
There you go. Okay. I was only wearing a leather jacket, by the way. Nothing else.
Just a shirtless?
Just shirtless, exactly. No pants. my bare, like, 22-year-old ass.
There you go.
Anyway, so I remember doing that. I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it, and I saw Pamela Anderson. She obviously was, like, far away from me. And,
yeah.
You know, but... You know, and you could see the director, and I saw the cameras, and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then I went out, and I did a couple of student films, and I got an agent, and I got a manager, and I started doing some other things.
Auditions that you came close on that ended up being a
I mean, there
thing?
Was one that was kind of funny. So there was the casting director that cast all of the, like, the kid shows. Like Saved by the Bell, that kind of whole venue of shows.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of those that came out, obviously. Anyway, there was a show that came out called, I think it was City Kids.
Okay.
I'm blanking on the exact name, but I think it was called City Kids. Anyway, I went in for like four or five auditions for that, called back, and I got screen tests for that. Mm-hmm. And it was basically 100% because you could see who was there. So at the screen test, it's kind of cool. They bring you into you're actually in at the studio.
Yeah.
And it's not just the casting director, the directors, the writers, the producer. It's like now it's the network heads there. Because they're like, okay, who are we going to like sign off for the next 3 to 5 years to do this project? So you could see like, and I had the script, so you could see, oh, the teacher. You could see three guys that were going to like, they were all up for the one role.
Yeah.
You know, and the girl, the brunette one, there was two of them. And there were three of the blonde girl. And there were two guys for my role. That was it.
No, man.
Actually, no, there's a third guy, but they stopped bringing, so they brought each of us in once. And then the third guy never went in again. Like, it wasn't like, oh, let's be friendly. And it just
kept
going.
This is get your hopes up time.
Well, it just kept going back. It was basically this blonde guy who had, like, long hair. He would go in. Then he'd come out. Then I would go in. And we'd keep doing the scenes. And we did the same scenes with each and every person.
Yeah. Chemistry test.
It was like 100%. Like, absolutely. There was no doubt it was between me and him. I talked to my manager after the fact. And they were like, there are a couple people in there that absolutely loved you. It's between you guys. And I found out a couple days later that it was him. I don't know if that would have done anything.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was like a Saved by the Bell type show. City Kids. I think it went for like 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. But it was like the lead on that show.
Like a Saturday morning kind of thing?
Hmm?
Like a Saturday morning kind of show?
Yeah, exactly. Like that exact venue. The other thing that I did was that could have theoretically launched my career in a different path was I actually did book... a pilot for Fox.
Okay.
And filmed it. And it was with Paula Marshall and Dan Cortez. Do you remember Dan Cortez?
Yeah, from MTV.
Yeah, exactly. And Paula Marshall and Bob Gutten, the guy, the warden from Shawshank.
The one who blows his head off at the end?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
For one of the greatest if anybody hasn't seen Shawshank.
Right. Somebody at home is like, no, I'm watching Shawshank. This is terrible. But anyway, so I got the pilot. And they changed the name of it. I'm trying. You wouldn't hear about it, obviously, because it was a pilot and never got picked up.
Yeah.
But it was... it was like, I mean, it's a professional pilot that got like, you know, I had to go in, same thing, tested for it, another thing, all this stuff. And I got the part. Anyway, the warden played Paula Marshall's dad.
Okay.
And Dan Cortez was her love interest.
Okay.
And I was one of the reoccurring, I was one of the guys. It was actually funny. It was a hockey thing.
Oh, cool.
So and Dan Cortez was like a former goalie.
That's awesome.
And he was going to, and I was one of the players, and he was my coach, and there's a bunch. Anyway, so I was going to be back and forth, and, you know, we'd have parties at, like, the writer and the creator's house, and he'd bring us all there, and he'd be like, oh, Tuck. He's like, episode three is when I get you, you got a girl. And I'm like, yes, this is awesome. Like, it was really exciting. You know, I had a contract for, like, the full season.
Yeah. When you sign off. They have to own you so you don't do anything else.
Well, basically, they just want to make sure that, you know, if the show gets big, at least they have you at a reasonable cost for a while, I guess that is.
Exactly.
So,
it's a rookie contract.
Right. You sign this whole thing where basically you do the pilot, and if it gets picked up, this is how much money you will make. And at this point in my life, I'm looking at the contract like, holy shit, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, we're talking like five figures per episode. I'm like, my mouth was like, are you...
And that's what they're starting with.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, I'm a nobody.
And who knows? It could become the next Friends and you'll be...
yeah, I mean, it was a Fox show.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, you think to yourself going, okay, well, if this show took off, what happened? In fact, I actually missed my best friend's wedding for it.
I am all about a screening of the movie?
No, the screening. I was like, hey, dude, I'm busy. Star Wars is up. No, my best friend's wedding. Okay, so my best friend is this guy, Keith Barrett, who I love to death. He actually comes to the World Series every summer to play one event. It was actually a great story. He and his dad came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
And they both played and they both cashed.
Oh, that's great.
It was a really cool story. Jane Furman took pictures of him and everything. It was really cool. His dad passed away. Just a great guy. He like grew up in that house, but he got married, and I was the best man. It's actually me and Brad. Well, me and Brad. It was the three of us. Me, Brad, and Keith. Brad was the goalie, and Keith didn't play hockey. Anyway, we were both the best man, and I would never in a million years. I wouldn't miss the wedding for anything.
Of course.
Except I literally was filming.
No, he's got to understand this.
And he did. He understood. Great. I was filming a pilot, which could change my life. I mean, this is what I've been like going for. You know, I had a bunch of like, you know, three lines, five lines, seven lines. I've been auditioning. I did a commercial. You know, I was SAG and everything. And I'm like, okay, you're trying to make ends meet. And this is, I have a part in a show. And if it gets picked up, I'm going to be a regular on a show on Fox, right? This is it.
This was actually an episode of Friends, by the way, where Joey has to rush to the wedding in costume.
Right. Except the difference was, yeah. I didn't make the wedding, though, because his wedding was, you know, his wedding was back east. I did send him a video that was in very poor taste, but it was very a guy-on-guy thing. It was just... Yeah.
Hopefully they didn't show it at the church.
No, he did. He didn't show it at the church, but he did show it. He was like, let me put this in, and his wife was like, oh, Tuckman sent you a best man speech? Let me watch.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, oh, my God. Oh, let me turn that off.
Hopefully you get him too much trouble.
Yeah,
let's talk about what is on your IMDb page.
Okay, go ahead. So those are things that didn't happen. Another thing that was actually cool was that might not be there also is The Perfect Storm.
The movie The Perfect Storm.
I was in the movie The Perfect Storm. Well,
oh,
sorry.
Okay.
I filmed for a week. I played one of the – they have an Air Force base. There's a whole Coast Guard scene. Anyway, they filmed for a week up at Point Magoo. They cut the entire thing because the film was too long, I guess.
It
was really, really upsetting because...
In fact, I think I'm confusing it with Master and Commander, Far Side of the World right now.
I haven't seen it. They're all the same. I have no idea. But anyway, I was really excited because I'm like George Clooney, you know, Wahlberg. I'm like, you know, Wolfgang Peterson.
Now I know I'm confusing it.
This is Wolfgang Peterson's director. I'm like, I can't believe I got this part. This is amazing. And I'm like, I know it's a small role, but I'm like, I'm going to be in the movie for, say, 40 seconds.
You had lines.
Oh, I had lines. We filmed for like 4 or 5 days up at Point Magoo. And I'm like... This is a movie that for the first time in my life, my dad and my mom and all her friends are going to go to the movies and be like, there's David.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Did they at least tell you beforehand?
Okay, so they didn't tell me beforehand, but I kind of knew it was they had like a screening, and then they had another thing, and they called me up to like make sure I got the correct spelling of my name, and I gave them that, and then I didn't hear back from them again for a while, and then I saw the screening, and I was like, and the girl I was dating at the time was like, well, maybe you're still in it. I'm like, no. You see the guy who's dying right now? Yeah, my scene was with him. So that's not good. So I got cut out of that. So anyway.
Unless they do a weird flashback.
So I felt like I had some close calls.
Yeah. Well, you were on Beverly Hills 90210. There's some bragging rights.
That was my first like legit like job, I guess. Like I did a commercial before that. I had a couple small things.
I can't tell if they gave you a name or if they just called you Guy.
I was just Guy. I had lines though. So that was sort of cool. We filmed it in Sherman Oaks and at a movie theater. And the part basically was Jason Priestley, I guess, was going through some stuff.
He was in the show.
Probably in real life, too.
Yeah.
Super nice guy, though, by the way. But anyway, his character was going through some stuff on the show. Anyway, I guess he was dating Jenny Garth's character at the time. They're at the movie theater. And we're walking down. It's like the end of the movie, so we're all walking down the stairs. And Jenny Garth stops. I don't see her, and I walk into her, and I knock her over. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Total gentleman, like me.
Mm-hmm.
I get down to help her up. Jason Priestley loses his shit. He comes over. He's like, get your hands off her, man. Total overreaction. Like I said, he was going through some tough times in his life. Mm-hmm. Total overreaction. Grabs me. I grab him. I'm like, what's your problem, man? Now, the good news is, like, Jason Priestley is, like, 5'7". I looked huge. Like, yeah. He's 5'7", like, maybe 135. I'm not a big guy, but I'm, like, 5'11", 170.
You're a former hockey player. That's all that matters.
Okay, 5'11", 170 next to 5'7", 135 looks like a monster.
Yeah.
Especially with the cameras.
Perspective.
Yeah, all of his friends were like, dude, what are you doing to him? Because clearly I hadn't done anything. That was it.
Yeah.
That was my first role.
Brandon, Kelly, hey.
Hey.
Yes.
Brandon,
what the hell's your problem?
Okay.
Right now, you're Brandon, my problem. Forget about it, whatever it was. Forget about
Brandon,
it.
Brandon, hey, what is the matter with you?
That's cool, though.
It was awesome.
You got to be the alpha in your role.
Yeah, and it was fun. Obviously, I'm like a 90210. It's one of like
exactly.
The iconic shows.
Well, that I was jealous about was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean, I was obsessed with that show growing up.
Yeah, Buffy was cool. That was probably the moment of my career where I thought I was going to make it.
Oh, okay.
Like there was one moment in your career where you think, so, okay, I was in the middle of, I had already done the test for the network and I didn't get that part.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, okay. But I was in the middle of, like, my fourth callback for the pilot for Fox.
Yeah.
I was in a transportation car. I was in a car. They were driving me to Point Magoo for...
Perfect Storm.
Perfect Storm. When I got the phone call telling me I got the part for Buffy.
Now you got three things? Come
yeah,
on.
And for anybody out there who's ever tried acting or anybody out there who's, like, knows... I mean, if you get an audition, you're like, yeah, I got an audition.
Yeah, even
and
having a sniff of one thing is a good
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, and I just felt like it was the first time, it was the first and probably only time in my acting career where I was like, I felt like a baller. Like, I was like.
You had some heat.
Like, hold on a second, man. I was going, yeah. So what's the rate? Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'll take that too. I'll slum a Buffy episode.
So we did the Buffy episode. I actually had to film it twice.
Okay.
Which was fun because I got paid twice.
Okay. Do you die in it or anything? Or
no, I was a nerd in it, actually. So there was a huge... I'm like doing homework in my room, and there's a huge
I looked
fight.
Up the episode. It's like Buffy's roommate goes crazy and...
Yeah. Anyway, so Buffy's roommate's, I guess, a demon or whatever, goes crazy. Buffy and the demon are fighting, and they're flying against the walls. Like, psh, bam, psh, blam, pam, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Insert any Batman-type poo you want to do. And I'm finally, I'm like, ah. And I.
These girls won't let me study.
Right. And I lean out my door like a nerd. And I'm like, will you keep it down there?
Do you mind? People are trying to study.
Ha
So we had to reshoot it twice, so it was kind of cool. So that's I got paid fun. Twice, but I still get residuals from that. I actually just got a check. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you if – I don't know if it was from that or 90210, but I still get checks for these things. I just got a check for 16 cents.
16 cents.
Yeah, so my financial woes are over.
Wow. Well, we can't, set. We can't go through all your credits, but you also had Party of Five on there and Saved by the Bell, the new class, which is kind of fun. You get to work with Dustin Diamond.
That was the guy that was the casting director that she and I just hit it off. She loved – she always thought – she was like, you're good, you're great. You're yeah. So she got me that. The only cool thing about Party 5, I'll tell you really quick, was a quick story about Jennifer Love Hewitt. I'm on the Party 5 set, right? And one of the guys there played hockey. So we were like talking about that and everything. And then during lunch, you know, we go to the area where everybody eats, like mm-hmm. the canteen or whatever. And I'm going there. And obviously, I don't really know anybody on the – I think it was the Sony lot we filmed. Okay. And I know nobody there. And everybody knows somebody, obviously. And Love, she liked to be called Love at this point. Mm-hmm. She came over and she goes, hey, do you know anybody here? Do you want to have lunch? And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, of course. Yeah. So I ate lunch with her. And I was like, that's so cool. I later saw her like a couple of years after because apparently she used the same veterinarian as I used.
Oh.
And she remembered me. So I'm pretty sure she had a crush on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like 90%. I'm 90% sure that I dropped
Daily or?
I think I dropped the ball on that one. I think I had a chance with her.
That's funny.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Well, you never know.
You never know.
You never know.
Either way, though, she was ridiculously nice. Like I said, I mean, I went there. I knew nobody. And she sat down with me and was like, hey, do you want to have lunch? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Acting didn't work out.
Yeah. I kind of stopped. I don't know if it didn't work out. I mean, I feel like it did.
Or you just...
I kind of started writing. Yeah, I started writing and stuff like that.
And you were gambling at this point, right?
I was playing poker. I was doing a lot of writing. A buddy of mine that actually lives in Vegas right now, we were writing and we did some writing and we found a little bit of success here and there with it. I did a cool like educational theater program thing where I played this like jock. We did a show called Nightmare on Puberty Street.
Okay.
Where I would wake up every morning. It's for Kaiser Permanente. It was their educational program. It was their way to give back to the community. We'd go to the office, wake up at 4:30 in the morning, go to the office, pick up the van, and drive to a school in Southern California, and then put on the show. We've all been to school. You've all had that experience, right, where you've been to the assembly and somebody's – well, anyway, our show was – they had an award-winning show that was for older kids that was about AIDS. They had a younger one, and then I did the middle one, which was geared toward, like, 6th to 8th graders, and it's called Nightmare on Puberty Street, and it dealt with, like, drug use and, like, pressuring people to have – sex, peer pressure, and that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And it was kind of cool.
Flashback to my high school years. I also did theater and did a similar thing.
Okay.
We had to travel to middle schools and stuff like that.
It was honestly, it was one of the
premarital sex is evil, and here's a skit
no,
why.
No, see, ours was pretty cool. Like, it was pretty religious. We didn't go down that route at all. Yeah. Like, it was really, we were just like, you know, be smart and listen to people. And I don't know, it was, I will say that it was probably one of the most, I didn't make a lot of money doing it, mm-hmm. you know, but it was so rewarding. I mean, I had kids coming to me. Like, we're doing shows in, like, downtown L.A. and, like, some really rough areas. And I would have, like, 13-year-old kids come to us because they thought we were, like, 18 probably.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got hats on backwards. We're, like, all, you know, geared up. And they'd be like, I don't know what to do. Like, I had one girl come to me, like, tell me, I don't know what to do. I'm pregnant and I've already had an abortion. My dad's going to kill me. She's, like, 13.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we'd have to, like, you know, it was...
Oof.
Yeah, it was pretty heavy.
That's
but
heavy
it was cool.
Stuff, yeah.
It was really rewarding. I did that for a year, and that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's another gig in a list of gigs that you...
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I was saying. Like, so I don't think acting didn't work out, because, like, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I kind of voluntarily was like, okay, let me try something else.
Yeah. I remember working an event, a poker tournament I had to cover, and trying to steal a football stream, and being surprised to see your face on Sky Sports.
Oh, man. Yeah.
When I was watching this, like, illegal stream of an NFL game one
Sunday. You hijacked a stream from Sky Sports.
Exactly. But that's how I was like, oh, there's Tuckman, you know. He's doing the football thing. There was a time when you maybe thought football or was the way you're going to go before poker or after poker?
I think it's funny, like, if you talk to, like, Ali, myself, Stapes, it's like, I think there was a moment where all of us were like, okay, let's try to get out of poker. We're going to try to get out. And they just keep crawling us back, pulling us back in.
Yeah, Ali was on the show talking about his close calls with MTV.
Right, like, you're like, ah, and it just poker keeps calling. So I was doing Live at the Bike, and then when Live at the Bike, I did a show because of Live at the Bike. I got a show through like the Poker Channel in Europe, mm-hmm. and that got me a lot of connections in Europe and in London. And I met a guy, and I was like, oh, I really would love to do this. And I met a guy who kind of like introduced me to the producer of Sky Sports, and they were looking for an American analyst.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I was like, hey, I'm thinking about moving to London. And he's like, okay. So we started working through it, and, you know, long story shortish, I got this offer to go. I was dating this girl that was British at the time, and I think we were both kind of racing. Like, if she had found a job in L.A., she would have moved to L.A., and we would have stayed there. And if I got a job in London, I would have moved there, and I got the job first.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then randomly enough, I gave him a call. I sent him an email after the New York Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Was this
the first time?
Okay, the miraculous helmet catch.
Yes. And I sent them an email, and I was like, wow, my God, I can't. And I was slated to start the following September. And I was like, what a game. And I was headed to Utah to go snowboarding and skiing. And I was like, what a game. This is amazing. You know, can't wait to work with you next year. You know? And he calls me up like 20 minutes later. Tuck, what do you know about motorsports? And he hired me. And then right then and there, he hired me to cover NASCAR.
And what did you know about motorsports?
Not a lot. But I learned. I'm a really quick learner.
Yeah, there you go.
Really, really quick learn.
And, you know, obviously poker called you back in 2011. You've been with the World Series of Poker ever since.
Yeah, I mean, I never really left poker, to be honest. When I moved out there, I was still doing, I started doing, like, the highlight shows for Poker Stars, like W Coops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Scoops and stuff like that. So I was doing those. I was doing the random EPTs. Like, mm-hmm. I remember I actually met Kara Scott in, where was it? I forget where it was. Anyway, Dortmund, maybe? I don't know exactly. But anyway, I met her on an EPT. Mm-hmm. I work with James Hardigan. And I met Kara that night. And I was like, oh, my God. And we became, obviously, we're good friends now. So I was still doing, like, the occasional EPTs and stuff mm-hmm. like that and little things. So I still was I was, like, while I was doing the, fortunately, I mean, NASCAR and NFL was only, like, once or twice a week.
Yeah.
So I still had plenty of time to do poker also. And I was still playing a ton of poker. And now that I lived over there, I was playing online also.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in 2009, I actually worked the World Series of Poker Europe with Maury and Poker Productions. I was just a producer on the floor. And then the following year, they had me do the live stream for the World Series of Poker Europe mm-hmm. at Empire Casino. And I think I did that 2 years. And then in 2011,
they were like, ESPN wants us.
That's when it kind of like, that was like, wow, this is awesome. And then it was gone.
Immediately. They're like, right. Yeah, maybe we committed too much.
Right. This is amazing.
We're going to dip our toe into poker.
Yeah.
We got some rapid fire questions to close it out.
Let's do it. Rapid fire.
We might have to adapt these because some of these are for players. Biggest pot you've ever witnessed?
I can say the biggest pot I've ever witnessed or played. Biggest pot I've ever witnessed is like $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually, this is one of the
things you
called. Tom Dwan, Phil Ivey.
Yeah.
It was like $1.2, $1.1 million, something ridiculous like that. The biggest pot I've ever been involved with is about $18,000.
Yeah. And how was the hairs on the back of the neck on that one?
It was okay. I mean, honestly, like, I had...
You don't sweat the big ones?
I turned the nuts.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
I turned the nuts, and against two players, we were all in, and then the river paired, and I lost.
Oh, okay.
So it didn't end up well, but I was like, by the time I lost, it was more like, like, super excited to, are you kidding? No. Mm. As you watch an $18,000 pot go to somewhere else.
And how do you shake off that feeling? Do you take a walk? Do you take a week-long break?
For me, a lot of times I'll take a break if I'm running bad, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm playing bad, if things are going bad. In a situation like that, yeah, I don't remember exactly what I did. My guess would be that I probably got up and left.
How do you deal with the haters? It's a 2+2 thread that popped up that said, I can't stand David Tuckman.
Oh, is there a new one?
No, it's an old one.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because there used to be a ton. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of proof that in my line of work, I'm never going to make everybody happy. Mm. You know, there are going to be people out there that appreciate my hard work and, you know, my attention to detail. And there are people out there that'll like my sense of humor, and there are people out there that'll hate it. And that's fine. You know, I mean, what's great about poker these days and really broadcast is, like, First of all, you can mute it. Second of all, there's different people. Some people are going to love Stapes.
People like
some
different
people probably
music.
Hate him, you know. And then some people really want like analytics, and they, you know, and you're going to like somebody different than that, you know. And I feel like there's somebody for everybody. So, I mean, I think earlier on in my career, it was probably tough. But at this point, I'm just like, okay, man, you know. I'll try to just kill him with kindness. I'll be like, I'm sorry that I'm not fulfilling your standards, you know.
Man,
I'm doing my best. I'm trying.
The first couple comments on this podcast, when I was like, I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just like making it up as I went the first few episodes. And I was like, whoa, these are brutal. I better stop reading these.
Yeah, and if you, honestly, if you can't deal with it, if you're like, you know, whether you're an actor, a poker player, podcaster, if you're in any business where you're in the limelight, I think, if you can't deal with criticism, it's really, really tough.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's going to come. It's going to happen.
It's got to roll off.
Yeah, I'm from New York, so I'm like, whatever. I always tell people, I'm like, I don't take things personal. I'm like, if you want to come at me, that's cool. Just be funny.
Yeah.
You know, don't just say something stupid like, oh, I hope you die in a grease fire. Like, be more original. If you're funny and you come at me with something really, really good when you troll me, I'll read it. So.
He'll read it and retweet it.
Yeah, probably. You know?
Do you remember your longest final table broadcast? Was there any particular brutal one that just would not
I don't
end?
Remember. I don't remember one in particular, to be honest. I know I've had final tables that have been like 14, 15 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, it's funny, though. Sometimes the ones that are more brutal than others are the ones that are like – that get heads up really quick.
Yes, and then they take too long to finish.
And it's just like two players that aren't – and it's not their fault. I feel bad for them.
They're just
but
deep.
It's two players that aren't accustomed to playing heads up, so there's a lot of like limp, check – check, 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 check. Oh, you got king high, you win.
Yeah.
And like, they don't have to be deep, but it's like, if especially if you're playing in a tournament series where the levels don't decrease when they get heads up, so you're playing like hour long.
Yeah.
And it's these guys are like 70 big blinds deep, and they're going like, you know, two big blinds are exchanging hands back and forth.
As a poker reporter, I get to this mode where, you know, the first 8 hours of the day, I'm fine. That last 4 hours, I'm rooting for the big stack every single time.
Of course we are.
It's hard not to do it in the broadcast booth as well.
You're like, yeah, let's go.
Come on, short stack. No, thank you.
You know, you try to just keep it fun, and you try to remember that, like, you know, for the players, this is their day.
Mm-hmm.
They may never get there again.
Mm-hmm.
So try to make it special for them. You know, for people that are watching at home, a lot of time it's like it's relatives, it's friends, it's our kids, grandparents, whatever it might be. And you want to make it special for them as well.
Yeah, and they're going to take any criticism you say so personally.
Right, so that's not our job. We try to keep – I mean, the whole thing of this is just to keep it entertaining, as entertaining as we possibly can. So – but yeah, there – I'm not going to lie. There are some that are just – they get interminably long. You're just like, oh, no more.
Who was the worst pro player you had in the booth?
The worst pro player?
Yeah. Who was the worst person you had in the booth, or anybody who was not invited back for just not cutting it?
Trying to think.
Anybody dropped too many F-bombs?
Oh, there's plenty of people that have dropped too many F-bombs. There have been plenty of people that have been like 86th by the companies I've worked for. Like Ray D, for example.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was brilliant. I love Ray D. I thought he was, I mean, hysterical. I was laughing my ass off. But I don't think he's welcome back in because of, you know, where he goes, you know? You know, but I don't know. I mean, I there probably is. And if I thought about it really long and hard, I could probably come up with a name or two, but I don't think there's a reason to be mean.
You never got those like situations where you're like trying to wrangle somebody in who's going too far off the deep end, and you're just like,
we're
recording this.
In all fairness, that's actually, I think that's probably one of my strengths. I'm really good at kind of adapting to people that are with me. So, you know, if somebody's really, really good at telling stories, or somebody's really funny, like our reigning player of the year is hysterical. I had no idea. So he joined me in the booth this past summer, and I was like, you're funny. I was like, okay, just go. And then there are some times where somebody's just not that good at it or not that comfortable with it. And, you know, I'll send a little private message to our producer and be like, hey, this person should be out in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, but I don't want to be
maybe
mean.
Maybe a commercial like, break somebody. Is needed.
Huh?
Maybe we go to a commercial quicker than usual.
Right. Or whatever.
All right.
Okay, these are rapid fire. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at these rapid fire.
It's all
ones.
Good. What was your worst job before poker? The job you hate. You've had a lot of gigs, so... What's one you would never do again?
Retail.
Yeah?
I hate folding clothes. I mean, in fact, the deal I made with my wife when we got together, we moved in together, was, okay, I'll do garbage, you do laundry.
Yeah.
I hate folding clothes. I will literally do laundry and then just leave it in the laundry thing and then just take the clothes out of there to put them on.
Yeah.
I hate folding laundry.
Yeah.
Why would I take a job in retail? It's like the
stupidest. People come by, they like look at 8 shirts. Right. To find one that they're not going to buy.
Your whole job as a retailer is just to like fold all day.
You just fold the same thing over and over and over again?
Yeah.
What was the job?
At least I think probably like the Gap or something stupid like that. Yeah. I mean, just I hated it.
It's brutal. What was your largest non-poker wager?
My largest non-poker wager was $5,000.
But what was it for?
The presidency, the 2016 presidency.
I lost? Yeah.
I lost. I got a really good price, though, so I couldn't be upset.
What were the odds?
I was gambling 5 to win 3.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that we
made it. That seems like a huge win for you.
At the time that I'll put it this way. A week before the election, I could have sold the bet yeah, very easily for a good profit.
Of course.
Yeah. So,
what is a talent you don't have that you wish you did?
Music.
Okay.
I think I'll just like broad. Like I'd love to be able to like play guitar, play the drums, just like grab an instrument and just like quickly. I have a hearing problem, so I'm really tone deaf. But just to like just grab an instrument and be able to like just like, oh, let's jam.
Yeah,
like that would be, I would love that.
You have no skills whatsoever?
I try to, but yeah. No, I mean I own a guitar. I own a guitar. My friend gave me a guitar and I'm like trying.
You just noodle on it.
I'm terrible. I mean, I have a harmonica that my grandfather gave me that I love. I'm terrible.
Yeah,
but I mean, I would love to be able to like jam.
Well, you got hockey instead. Sorry.
No. Hey, listen. Like I said, I'm not. I wouldn't change my life. I'm happy with where I am. But if you're asking me, there's a skill that I would love to have. I just think the ability to like light a fire, sit outside, and grab a guitar and sing some like James Taylor song.
Oh yeah,
that would just be cool, right?
Yeah. Be that guy at the party.
Yeah, be that guy exactly. Right. That guy always gets laid.
Yeah. Well, he did.
He did.
He did in college for sure.
I mean, I could fast forward it to like whatever music is more appropriate to now.
You'd have to whip out a laptop and play some.
If I grabbed, EDM, I feel like if I grabbed the guitar and I sang some song that was more appropriate today, I'd still get laid.
Yeah, it still works.
Yeah.
Headphones on at the table, yes or no?
I think it's fine.
Okay. And
I mean, as long as your headphones aren't so loud that you can't hear anything. I mean, if you're that guy who has headphones on your table and then you're like, it's your turn to act.
Yeah.
No, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. Or you have to be like, what did you say? Just turn your headphones down so you can hear both. If you can't, then no.
And what are you listening to?
I would say 80% of the time I'm not the headphone guy, but if there's somebody annoying at my table, there's somebody like me at the table, it was not me obviously, sometimes I'll put them on and depending on what mood I'm in, you know, anything from classic rock to chill James Taylor to Cat Stevens to, I mean, I can get into like an R&B mode if I want to. I mean, okay. It depends.
You're all over the place.
I am. I'm totally all over the place.
Do you have a favorite album?
Probably The River.
Okay.
Springsteen, probably. I would imagine. I mean, there's so many. Probably.
That's your Northeast roots coming in.
Oh yeah, I'm totally Springsteen. I have quotes from Springsteen's song on my calf. I'll show you. Hold on, where are they? There we go.
Oh wow, yeah.
Yeah, that's a wedding. My wife and our wedding song.
Do you have any other ink?
No, that's it. I want more though. Mm-hmm. After I did this, I kind of want more.
Yeah.
My youngest son's name is Silas Springsteen Tuckman.
That's awesome.
That was my. By the way, that's not my idea. That was my wife's idea.
That's cool.
And I was like, sure, I'm okay with it.
The boss.
So yeah.
Favorite movie.
Oh man. You know, there's so many movies. And it depends what genre. But I'll just throw Slapshot out there.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's probably not my favorite movie, but I think it's like one of the best movies. I think it's one of the most underrated.
Definitely one of the best hockey movies.
It's the best hockey movie.
You don't like Goon? Goon is...
No. Slapshot is...
I'm a big Goon fan.
Goon's a good movie, but it's like... It's Paul Newman. Slapshot is probably one of the most underrated sports comedies of all time.
Yeah.
And when people think of great sports comedies, they think of like Caddyshack and Major League. And, you know, they don't even... Like, people don't know Slapshot.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. If you've never seen Slapshot, do yourself a favor. Get Slapshot. Thank me later.
Yeah, thank David this summer at the series.
No, it's a great movie. It's not my favorite movie, but I'll just throw that out there.
Do you have a celebrity doppelganger? Or growing up, did people tell you look like somebody?
Corey Haim.
Corey Haim.
I'm not seeing growing it. Up. Okay. Growing up, well, I mean, growing up, I was...
I would need a floppier haircut.
I was like 11. I can show you pictures. I had really floppy hair. You know, I had the Jufro going on. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Corey Haim was like a dead ringer. Then later on in life, why am I blanking on this guy's name? Ace Ventura.
That's two in a row. Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey. Thank you.
That's
all
hilarious.
All the time, Jim Carrey. When, I guess because I have big facial expressions and everything, but... This was, I would say, Corey Haim was from like 9 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Carrey was like 23 to like...
I can see you doing a face
23
expression.
To like 29. I'll show you a picture that you can, if you want to, you can post it. And you'll see what I'm talking about. Like 23 to 29, like Ace Ventura, like totally. That was
your Halloween costume go-to?
Yeah, I didn't even need to. I'm going to get this out while you do this.
That's funny.
So you can comment on it while I talk.
Well, I was just going to say, I just interviewed Eric Rodewig for the podcast.
I'm sorry to hear that. Times are desperate? Are you really just bringing up the bottom of the barrel?
He had some funny stories about beating Helmuth heads up for a bracelet. Yeah, he also was told that he had a Jim Carrey look, but his was more when he had a flat top during the Me, Myself, and Irene days.
Right. Okay, I can see that.
Anyway, that makes sense. Hold on, I'm going to find this picture. We end our podcast the same way every time.
Do we?
With a question from the random question generator.
Random question generator. I like this. Okay.
You ready?
Go ahead.
All right, speaking of movies, what movie would be greatly improved if it was made into a musical?
Well, that's like every movie.
You think every movie would be better if it was a musical?
I love musicals. Who doesn't like a musical?
Oh, right now, Cats is in the news for being one of the worst.
Shawshank Redemption.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be a greatly improved movie if it was. Imagine it. Think about it.
It's already, I think, IMDb's number one movie of all time.
Right, but think about how much better it would be if it was a musical.
This would be some dark songs.
Okay, fine. Star Wars.
I mean, yeah. You wouldn't even need to change the music. Just add lyrics.
Right. I mean, yeah.
Space opera.
Yeah. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. Thank you so much, David, for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Good luck in your game today.
Okay. I hope I wasn't too boring. Thank you.
No, that was great.
Later.
That's it. That is the show. Thank you once again to Tuck for the great stories. You can follow David on social media at Tuck on Sports. You can check out his website at tuckonsports.com. And finally, since I know you love podcasts, you can hear more of Tuck with the Under the Gun podcast. Speaking of podcasts, before you close this episode and skip to the next, can I interest you in leaving a nice rating and review for Poker Stories? It's right there if you scroll to the bottom of the podcast page in your app. Just leave us a tidy 5-star rating and perhaps a few complimentary words, and let us know about it with an email to pokerstories@cardplayer.com. Do that, and we will reward you with a free digital subscription to Card Player Magazine. Follow us on Twitter @CardPlayerMedia and also @poker_stories. Thanks for listening.